Morning, everybody. This is Mary King. I'm a retired economist from the Portland State Economics Faculty, and I'm here with Colleen Carroll to talk to you about the Eviction Representation for All campaign going on in this community now. Before we get started, let me just thank KBOO and the Old Mole Show for having us on and helping us get the word out to the community. Colleen, could you introduce yourself to us and tell us a little bit about the measure and what's in it?
Sure. Thanks so much for having this conversation with me, Mary. My name is Colleen Carroll, and I'm one of the volunteer organizers and spokespeople with the Eviction Representation for All campaign. We are the Yes on Measure 26-238 campaign, which is a ballot measure that will be on the May 16th ballot in Multnomah County. Our campaign is a coalition of groups and organizations that have been working on this policy for about 2 years now, coming out of the worst of the eviction crisis through COVID and through to seeing actually that evictions have been causing harm in our community, the whole time before COVID and past COVID. So in addition to the groups that have been working on this, like I said, for about 2 years now, the campaign has over 40 endorsers now. So our coalition is large and it's growing. And at people and organizations who are seeing the ways displacement and eviction really cause harm and disrupt our communities. So housing advocacy groups, labor unions who are seeing it both for their members, but also right for teachers unions who are seeing it impact their students, faith communities who have been gathering and really asking what can their communities be doing to address the housing crisis, as well as many other community-based organizations, specifically frontline organizations who have been in the community helping tenants, apply for that rental assistance, get that safe harbor, all of the things that we've needed to do to keep ourselves safe over this past 2 years. That whole, 40 plus organizations have gotten around this measure to say this makes sense and we need it in our community.
That's fantastic. And I understand this is something that's happening in other cities as well. What elements of policies from other places have you pulled into this measure specifically?
At its heart, our measure, Eviction Representation for All, is what's called a right to counsel measure. Right to counsel, maybe people, think, oh, that's the thing that we have. It's a constitutional guarantee, right? The right to a lawyer. And at a federal level and in the Constitution, that only applies to criminal cases, right? So if you are charged with a crime, you have the right to a lawyer. Many, many, many things that deeply impact our lives take place in the legal system, but they take place in the civil court system. And eviction is one of those things. And in civil court, there is no federally or state guarantee to a lawyer. And so for tenants who are facing an eviction, who go to the courtroom to fight for their housing, they have no legal representation on their side, and they have to do all of the bureaucratic and process and legalese stuff, on pace with the court's pace, not their pace, right? And they have to do it alone. And on top of that, they are facing another side who almost always has a lawyer. Landlords almost always have a lawyer or an agent, somebody who is a professional at doing this, and tenants are by themselves. And so just off the bat, it creates this massive disparity in how what should be, what we like to think of as a fair and balanced adjudication absolutely is not, because you cannot be fair and balanced when one side is, fluent in the language of the court and the other side is terrified there for the first time and really, really stressed out and alone. So there's no way that that can be fair. So right to counsel came out of the tenants movement and people who were directly, seeing the impacts of the eviction court, not just of eviction, but eviction court in New York City. So a tenant-led coalition pushed really, really hard to develop and fight for a civil right to counsel in eviction court. And it passed in New York in 2017. And that really started a movement across the United States, which is now known as the Tenants' Right to Counsel movement. And we have seen policies like the one that started in New York and have been growing and expanding and, being packaged to meet the need of the community in different places. And so I think we're up to over 16 jurisdictions now that have tenant right to counsel. New York started in 2017 and kind of slowly this place and that place added up, then COVID hit. And all of a sudden, the reality of how precarious so many tenants are in our across the United States and in Multnomah County also really hit home for people, right? We're one paycheck away. Being late 1 month on rent, we're that couple days late away from being kicked out of our homes. So the precarity really became clear. And in the 2 years where COVID and COVID protections kind of cracked open possibilities, lots more jurisdictions created either pilot programs or passed real full civil right to counsel measures. And here in Multnomah County, we are looking to those, we're looking to build on them and right size it to our community. And that's how we came up with eviction representation for all.
I did see recently the last posting for the proportion of tenants who had counsel in eviction court in January 2023 was 2%, 1 in 50. So really low, despite the fact that we've got existing programs. So for Portland and Multnomah County, you're following up on things that people have learned elsewhere, things that people have piloted elsewhere. And as I understand it, it's not just having an attorney in court with people. It's also other supports and services that I believe you've included in this measure. Can you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. Legal representation really matters and makes a huge difference in reducing evictions and preventing the worst outcomes. Legal representation paired with emergency rental assistance and paired with tenant outreach and able to be instituted earlier on in the process, those are the things that what we call an ecosystem of eviction prevention will really address. And that's different than just winning a case in court. I think that there's a conception that tenant right to counsel is about winning a case in court. While it matters to reduce the amount of judgments of eviction, it actually matters to look back to the whole process of an eviction, starting from the notice of termination, and intervene as early as possible. And so our policy does just that. We have created a tenant resource office in at the county, and that resource office will be responsible for managing the program and taking in notifications of termination. So that immediately, right when the tenant gets it, within 24 hours, the program is notified and the legal representation teams that can intervene before the court is even gotten involved. And I think that's really important to think about. How many of these cases could we work out and mediate before a filing has even happened? Right to counsel talks about different measures of success, reducing filings, less cases in court, and handled ahead of time, as well as less judgments of eviction. And that's the other thing that this program does really well, which is there's a, you know, about a 15-day window from when you get that summons to court to when your trial date that you have the opportunity to negotiate with your landlord. In kind of simple legal terms, often referred to as a settlement, if you've ever heard somebody say, oh, I settled that case, right? It means it didn't go to a trial. That's how almost all eviction cases end in our community, either by default, which means the landlord won just because they showed up, no merit to the case at all, or more likely, they go through a process of stipulated agreements. And that what happens in Multnomah County is the tenant shows up, you're at your first appearance, and the judge says, welcome, hello, here's the thing. You can either go out into the hallway and talk to your landlord's lawyer for 5 minutes and come back and let me know what you've agreed to, or you can go to trial. Oh, and by the way, if you go to trial, you risk taking on the legal fees of the winning side. So tenants, again, think, well, that seems like a worse outcome than just losing my home. If I'm going to lose my home, I don't also want to pay this guy's legal fees. So you step outside into the hallway and you have that 3 to 5 minute negotiation, which, I mean, is just basically coercive. And so those stipulated agreements are really heavily weighted towards the landlord. They often don't give enough time to work out the things, right? Things like, hey, I'm applying for rental assistance, and that takes some time. So these stipulated agreements are great tools, but our purpose is to make them durable and fair. When the tenant's legal team and the landlord's legal team can negotiate that lawyer to lawyer, you know, that's where we see a lot of the statistics about tenant right to counsel keeping people in their homes. Yeah, in short, I really appreciate the way Kim McCarty, who is the ED of Community Alliance of Tenants, talks about this, that evictions should be rare and they should be fair. And that's what all together this package does.
So in that latter part there, you're addressing this idea of invisible evictions. Mm. What do people mean when they talk about that?
When we talk about counts and amount of evictions, what we're looking at is how many cases have been filed with the court. Unfortunately, that is not all of the evictions that are happening, because there's a step before that called the notice of termination. And that's the piece of paper your landlord sends you in the mail or puts on your door, you know, that states, says, notice of termination, your lease is being terminated, you must move out. And lots of people think, I can't fight this, right? And so when you move out at that stage, that's often called a self-eviction, and there's no record of it. The only time we see an eviction in court is when the tenant doesn't leave, because often it's 72 hours, right? That's how long for non-payment is right now. So when a tenant is unable to move within 72 hours and unable to come up with the money that is owed because rental assistance applications are taking too long or whatever it is, then it gets filed with court and then your first appearance gets set. But that notice of termination to summons stage is the invisible period and where lots of displacement is happening and where we would like to intervene. And this, our program makes that possible.
And how does the Eviction Representation for All program make it possible to prevent the invisible evictions?
By requiring that landlords file those notices of termination with the tenant resource office so that the legal and tenant outreach teams can reach out to that person at that point.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, can we switch gears a little bit? I'm hoping you can tell everyone a bit more about the impacts of eviction. What happens to families as a result of being evicted?
Yeah, there's definitely a growing body of study taking it out of thinking of this as a single event that just happens and then it's done, and seeing it as a long process of stress, of trauma, and often cyclical. So it's this kind of constant stress for many, many renters. It has huge impacts on our health, and that's part of a really interesting body of study connecting eviction to both public health and individual health outcomes. There are also massive impacts on children. They are dealing with the stress of their parents being stressed out. And when an eviction happens, because our housing dictates our schooling, many, many students are pulled out of their school, are pulled out of their community, their friend group, and uprooted. And that has a huge impact. Short-term and long-term impacts are being studied more. And basically all of it says it's not good and it's not necessary. There are other ways to mediate these issues.
I was just going to say, throwing people out of their homes, that's so drastic. Yeah. And I know that economists say that, yes, it happens to people who are already experiencing some level of financial or health stress, but the fact of eviction itself increases poverty rates, increases unemployment, lowers incomes, it increases hospitalizations, which has a whole impact on the community as well then.
Yeah, I think, about families that are evicted and displaced, and that is the, catalyst. One of the parents losing their jobs because where they have to move to is off transit, is harder to get to, right? So then you lose a job you already have, not to mention the eviction on your record, which means that less and less landlords are willing to rent to you, and you're pushed to the more illegal and less desirable units that become available to you.
I've also read that it is not applied evenly. That landlords particularly tend to evict women. Mm-hmm. They particularly tend to evict Black families. They particularly tend to evict families with more children. So regardless of, say, your rental history and what you might owe, eviction itself is still a selective kind of process that's pretty discriminatory.
Yeah, the number one predictor of an eviction is having a kid in the home. And there's great recent research that's been published through the Eviction Research Network that have analyzed Oregon's data specifically, and much like the rest of the country, it is Black families and Indigenous families that are most often evicted.
And then I know that there are the sort of cold-blooded economic analysis about, yes, well, this also puts up public spending because we have to pay for more shelters and more foster care and more emergency room visits and XYZ, so that actually avoiding that public expenditure, but paying for attorneys, the community comes out ahead. It's one of those things that more than pays for itself.
Yeah,
which is appalling that we have to bring that up. But may be helpful.
Creating a dedicated funding stream that says this is something we're committing to is part of the policy. When we came up with this capital gains tax, it really made sense because we don't need, you know, that much money, and being able to target a very small increase on, you know, this unearned income really made sense.
I think it was a really good choice on the part of the campaign to pick that capital gains income tax. And the reason is that while eviction prevention on the one end helps reduce economic inequality by keeping people included in the economy, the capital gains income goes overwhelmingly to very affluent and very white households. It's a very privileged group of people, and it's a very small tax on them. It's less than 1%. So people don't realize that economic inequality in and of itself is a real issue here locally. Income inequality hit a record high in Oregon in 2020, and we just don't know the more recent numbers. Really, a capital gains income tax is a tax on the income from sale of wealth, from the sale of an asset. It means that the tax take will vary. So you need to have a big reserve. If you want to tax at the top, the take is going to vary. So you just plan for that. It's not a big deal. And then the other thing that people forget or don't realize in the first place is the way that the tax burden has been shifted off people really who have the ability to pay and pushed down the income scale to where it means people pay a fee like a gas tax and they have to wait to replace their kids' outgrown shoes. We're really effectively in the rich world, a low tax country. And in the top federal income tax rate since Ronald Reagan has never been as high as 40%, whereas we spent 50 years in the 20th century with it above 70% and 20 of them above 90%. Whoa. You know, people think, oh, those were the glory days, the 50s and 60s. The economy was working so great. Yeah, guess what the tax rate was at the top? You know, we should go back to that.
The other thing that when you were talking, it really made me think about what's an acceptable, you know, year over year raise, right? We talk about taxes because they happen annually, right? So next year, you know, I might have to pay less than 1% more on earnings, right, from the sale of stocks and bonds. But what is for sure, is the increase on my rent that's happening. And that's 14%. I just over and over want to ask, why is it so terrifying to think about a raise on taxes of less than 1% and the concept that every tenant is getting an at least 14% raise? As we've been seeing in the news, there are lots of exceptions to that. I will be priced out of this apartment eventually because my wages aren't going up that much.
No, that's really a good point. The rent control cap that the state of Oregon put on and preempted the localities from having their own rent control allows such high rent increases, both the rate of inflation plus 7%, whereas nobody's getting raises like that. Colleen, while we've got you, can you tell us more about the campaign and especially how people can get involved? I know the election's coming up in May, right?
That's right. Yeah. So May 16th, we're on the ballot. And so I really encourage everybody who's listening, if you're a voter, look for that special election ballot. We are the Yes on 26238 campaign. Like I said, we're a coalition of organizations that have been working on this for a long time, and we're always growing. And so if you, if listeners are a member of a neighborhood association, a faith community, a bowling league, you know, all of these places that you're in conversations with other people, talk to them and say, hey, have you heard about eviction representation for all? Send them to our website. Email us. We would love to come do a presentation. We invite people to want to know more because I think by understanding what the eviction process really entails, we begin to see that this is preventable and it's also a problem. Visit our website, eratenants.org. check us out on social if that matters, right? If you're somebody who loves to see a cute picture of canvassers. And speaking of canvases, that's the community footwork. And so if you've never canvassed before, it's a great way to learn the process of like direct democracy, the closest thing we have to direct democracy through ballot measures. And so if you're able to and interested, please give a donation. You can do that on our website as well.
Well, thank you so much for speaking to the Old Mole. And we really appreciate the opportunity from the Old Mole Soul to let people know about the Eviction Representation for All campaign and get the word out. Because just as you say, this is a people power campaign. People need to hear and know about it. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.